This is Nate and Crate on SB Nation Radio. Here's your hosts, Nate Griffin and Patrick Creighton.
Nate and Crate, SB Nation Radio. Right now, I love talking to this guy. Pulls no punches. He tells it like it is. He's a former president of WCW. He's a former general manager of Raw at WWE. And he hosts the Bischoff on Wrestling podcast every Wednesday. You can get it. It's on podcastreader.com as well as it's available in the iTunes store. He's Eric Bischoff joining us. Hey, Eric, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, man. Good to be here.
So I see for the last week or so, you've been pretty actively involved in some back and forth on Twitter with you and Vince Russo. How did that start?
Oh, gosh, I don't really know. I think it probably started, again, it's kind of an annual thing, to be honest. But I think most recently, Jim Cornette and I were on a program that the WWE produced called Table for Three. And it's on the WWE Network. And during the course of that sit-down interview, Jim Cornette, who's got a long history with Vince Russo, just like I do, became very vocal and expressed his distaste, I'll put it that way, for Vince Russo. And Cornette and I have our own colorful kind of history, and you know, it was like kind of the enemy of my enemy makes you my friend kind of thing, or however that saying goes. So between the two of us, even though we never really got along, didn't have much of a relationship, the fact that we had such, you know, mutual dislike for Vince Russo kind of bonded us in that show. And Jim Cornette was very vocal about it, and it kind of took on a life of its own after that.
You know, I'm admittedly a guy who's a wrestling fan and have been since I'm 7 years old and used to watch it. I grew up in New York and, you know, you'd watch it on Saturday mornings. And, you know, back then, you know, you had WCW was still called the NWA. You had WWE. You had the AWA. On Saturday mornings, you even had something called GLOW, which was nothing like what the women's wrestling is today. But it was interesting. I would watch it and try not to get in trouble for doing so. And, you know, it's funny because so many different people that I know have come in and out of the wrestling business. And everybody that I know who's gotten into it got into it because at some point they were a fan. You know, they were a fan. They grew up watching it. They loved it. And they, you know, decided, hey, this is what I want to do. And, you know, when you first got involved with wrestling, was that something that, A, were you a fan of the product? And, B, did you find that guys in the business who grew up as fans, that it was a helpful thing for them or a hindrance?
Well, to answer your first question, yeah, I was a fan as a kid growing up in Detroit. My mom and dad would both be, you know, they would go to work on Saturday mornings and leave my little brother and I at home alone. And we had complete control of the television from about 8 o'clock in the morning till noon. So we would sit down and commandeer a couple boxes of cereal and sit in front of the television and watch professional wrestling in Detroit. At that time, it was on CKLW, which was a station out of Windsor, Canada. It was called Big Time Wrestling. So I grew up watching wrestling at a very young age. Subsequently, I moved to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, when I was about 14. Didn't really know anybody, didn't have any friends. So, you know, professional wrestling was kind of my go-to, you know, televised comfort food, if you will. And, you know, became a fan there. Watched Bruno Sammartino and some of the stars from the, you know, the East Coast that I didn't really see, you know, in Detroit. And then, you know, a couple years later, I moved to Minnesota. And, you know, same thing happened. Kind of just picked it right up where I left off, tuned into Vern Gagne's AWA that you mentioned. and became a fan there. By that time, I'm 15 or 16 years old, and I started wrestling in high school myself. Vern Gagne was an amateur wrestler. So it was just kind of a natural evolution for me growing up as a kid. And, yeah, I was a fan of wrestling. It's not the reason I got into the business. Quite honestly, I broke into the business by sheer fluke and coincidence. But I was a fan growing up from, you know, the earliest memories I have of television and watching television. In terms of your second question, in terms of did I think it was a help or a hindrance, I mean, clearly if you grow up watching the product and have a sense of what it is, it will probably be easier for you to evolve and learn and grow in the industry as opposed to walking in completely, you know, oblivious to what the product really is. But some people have. You know, there are people, and I can't name them. I don't know who they are, but I remember having conversations with certain guys in the business who really didn't spend a lot of time watching professional wrestling grow up, who broke in, you know, out of college or in some cases they played professional sports and got involved in professional wrestling because an opportunity presented itself. So every path is different, but for the most part, most of the people involved kind of grew up watching.
Eric Bischoff with us on the hotline. And Eric, you mentioned that your break into the business was sort of by accident and happenstance because you happen to be wearing a suit. Could you share that story?
Well, I mean, I broke into the business quite honestly. It's a long story. I'll try to keep it short here and condense it. But I had a good friend of mine who he and I kind of created this kid's game. It was a box game like you would buy at retail. And we went off and we manufactured about 5,000 of them over in Korea and had them all shipped over to the United States. And we were determined that, you know, we were going to make our fortune with this kid's action game. It was called Ninja Star Wars, by the way. And we got the games here to the United States and then realized that we didn't know anything at all about how to market and retail games. So out of sheer necessity and survival, I ended up calling Vern Gagne down at the AWA and said, look, we've got these games. We paid for the manufacturing. We'll pay to produce a television commercial. And if you air it on your show, because at that time he aired Monday through Friday on ESPN, if you air it on your show, we'll take the orders, we'll fulfill them, and we'll split the profits 50-50. And we did. And it was, I wouldn't call it successful, but it wasn't a dismal failure. And it was through that relationship that I developed with Vern Gagne that I got hired essentially as a salesperson for his organization. I did television syndication, which is, you know, a fancy way of saying door-to-door television sales. And after being there for about a year or so, I happened to be wearing a sport coat, and I had a tie in my office, and the regular announcer didn't make it, Larry Nelson. He had a little altercation with a bottle of Jim Beam and a police officer in his car. He ended up getting a DUI, couldn't make it to a television taping. I was the only one in the building with a sport coat and a tie, and next thing I knew, I'm on camera, you know, conducting interviews with wrestling talent.
That's awesome. Back in the days when you said AWA used to be on ESPN Monday to Friday, I think it was AWA, and then right after it was roller derby. Because I think that's how I got into roller derby, was it came on right after AWA wrestling. I got into all kinds of things that kids get into and stuff like that. Eric Bischoff with us on the hotline. And from a guy who started
Hello?
Off – Ron, we got connection? Eric, can you hear me? Eric? All right, we lost Eric. We'll have to get him back for the next segment. But I think if you have a history of how Eric Bischoff's career took place, it's amazing some of the way things that have gone on. And you know, I always hear stories about, well, you know, this guy didn't make it, so somebody else just got thrown in their spot like out of nowhere. And that's exactly what happened. He heard about Larry Nelson getting a DUI, missed the show, and Vern Gagne and Greg Gagne's son said, okay, Eric, you're up. Go, you know, put your tie on and, you know, you're doing interviews. And after that, went on to WCW. It's pretty amazing. Hopefully we'll be able to get Eric back for the next segment because there's always, you know, always refer to wrestling as like the male soap opera and the crazy things that go on the camera. But off the camera, there's always much cooler stuff or much crazier stuff. that goes on, and we'll try to, you know, get to some of that with him and some fun stuff. You know, Eric's podcast, you can releases a new one every Wednesday. It's called Bishop on Wrestling, and you can get it at podcastarena.com. You can download it in the iTunes store. And they're very interesting listens. If you're a fan of pro wrestling, you definitely want to check out the podcast, and it releases a new one every Wednesday. So while Ron tries to get Eric back on the phone for the next segment, we're just about ready. We're good for the next segment? All right, cool. So you know what? We'll have more with Eric Bischoff coming up in, let's say, about 3.5 minutes. We'll have some fun with that. Going to have to work on his mobile service provider. Seem to be having some issues with that lately with a lot of guests. Got to get off that Walmart brand and on to the big boys. It's Nate and Crate.
This is Nate and Crate on SB Nation Radio. Here's your hosts, Nate Griffin and Patrick Creighton.
Nate and Crate, SB Nation Radio, and with Eric Bischoff on the hotline. Hey, Eric.
Back at you. How you doing, man?
Oh, man, it's so good that you can hear me again.
Yeah, this is a much better connection for me. I live out in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming, so every once in a while, cell service is a bit challenging.
Now, do you split your time in different places? I mean, you're not originally from Wyoming. How did you wind up there?
You know, I came out here when I was 22 years old. I had never been west of Minnesota. Never seen the Rocky Mountains, never experienced that. As a kid growing up in Detroit, you know, I watched Westerns all the time and grew up fascinated with cowboy culture and the Rocky Mountains and all that, you know, romantic Western stuff. And when I was 22, a friend of mine and I just jumped in our car and, you know, with about $140 in cash between us and a couple credit cards that didn't start bouncing until we got back, and came out west, and I remember coming here to Cody, Wyoming, where I live now, and I walked through downtown, and I said, you know, someday I'm going to live here. And it, you know, took me about 40 years to figure it out, but I made it.
All right, let's have a little bit of fun. You know, the first thing is, you know, if I look up how old you are, I'm shocked because I wouldn't look at you and think that. You certainly look a lot young. You look like you could kind of still go. In all your years in professional wrestling, you know, AWA, WCW, WWE, TNA, have you ever had to have a scrum with someone?
Not in the business, you know, outside of the business, you know, outside of where I work. Yeah. I mean, I got into an altercation about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago in a little place in Prescott, Arizona. But you know, other than that kind of thing, no, never really had any issues in the business.
Well, all the, you know, there's a lot of, you know, places that report, you know, between friction of, you know, this guy and that guy, these guys got into a fight, these guys got into a brawl. Is that legit or is that, for the most part, overblown?
Well, it depends who it is. You know, I mean, Ric Flair and I did get into an altercation, you know, I don't know how long ago it was now, probably 2003 or so. I wouldn't consider it a fight because I wasn't going to fight Rick. He was a friend of mine, and it got broke up very quickly. But, you know, there have been occasions where guys, you know, get hot at each other. And, you know, life on the road is challenging. You know, you're away from home for extended periods of time. You're living in hotels. You're not eating the way you want to eat. You're not getting a lot of rest, and you know you get sick of everybody you're around after, you know, 3, 4, 5 weeks on the road. So it happens occasionally, but I would say it's extremely rare and probably not any different than any other line of work.
What is life on the road with Ric Flair like?
Well, you know, I can't really say because, you know, I grew up in the business, I shouldn't say grew up, but when I came up in the business, I was on the business side of the wrestling business, so I didn't tour. You know, I wasn't on the road like a wrestler. You know, these guys go on the road and they'll do a 10-day loop or a 2-week loop, or in some cases in the WWE, you know, up to a month at a time before they get home for 48 hours and just long enough to do their laundry and, you know, repack and head out and do it again. I never experienced that, so I can't really share what life on the road in that sense was. But for me, you know, I did go from television, you know, well, Nitro was live, obviously, but, you know, Thunder was taped and there was a lot of travel. And those nights for me were fun. They were intense. It was hard work. But, man, once the show was over and we knew that we hit it out of the park, we found time to celebrate and have a good time.
What do you think about Kane possibly running for political office? I mean, is it weird to see a guy who's been a professional wrestler run for political office?
Well, Kane, Glenn Jacobs is running for political office. He's not thinking about it. He's actually committed to doing it. And I know Glenn pretty well. When I was in WWE, I worked with him in the ring. We had a couple little programs together and had the opportunity to work with him creatively speaking, but I also traveled with him a little bit doing some promotions and things like that. He and I, you know, were often at the same radio station, you know, when we'd hang together and spend time together. And he's a very, very intelligent guy. You know, you see the character and you get caught up in this big, you know, almost, I don't want to say cartoonish, but in this big animated, colorful, larger than life character. And sometimes you don't realize that there's, and oftentimes there are some very, very intelligent people behind that character. And Glenn was one of them. Knows his history very well, knows how politics works, knows how the government works, probably has more knowledge of, you know, the government and the functionality of the government, or in our case, the dysfunctionality of it, than, you know, 80% of the people who hold office.
Eric Bischoff with us on the hotline, former president of WCW, and that's really where Eric kind of changed the wrestling business as president of WCW and the creation of the NWO. How did the signing of Hall and Nash come around, and how did you come up with this idea of this rival faction that was going to try to take over WCW?
You know, I had been doing a lot of business over in Japan since about 1994, starting, I guess, at about 1994. And at that time, you know, there was the company that I was doing business with was called New Japan Pro Wrestling, and they were doing extremely well. They were, you know, they had like 4, 5, 6 big shows a year that they would put 60, 80, 70, you know, sometimes up to 90,000 people, like in the Tokyo Dome on their big New Year's Eve show. And they would charge, probably the average ticket price was around $100 a ticket. Now, this is going back to the mid-90s. So that was a significant amount of business compared to what we were doing here in the States. So, I, you know, in my business travelings, you know, going back and forth over there, I just started studying the things that worked. And there was a sense of reality that was in the New Japan presentation that didn't really exist in WWE or WWF at that time, and certainly not in WCW. So while I was in Japan doing business, I studied what was working for them, and I had this vague notion at that time of, you know, a way to kind of create more reality within our storytelling experience and presentation. And it was just kind of coincidental that Scott Hall became available and Kevin Nash became available. So these vague notions I had of creating the storyline that was kind of it was basically anarchy, you know, it was a civil war. And the premise of the story was, you know, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash both had worked previously at WCW. They both felt like they were underappreciated and mistreated and not given the opportunities they deserved. So they left and they went to the WWF. They went on to become big stars. And then they were coming back to WCW to get their revenge and to make WCW pay for not recognizing their inherent star potential. That was the premise of the story. And about 80% of that, by the way, was true. It was real. So when Scott and Kevin became available, it just, everything dovetailed. It was like this perfect confluence of a creative idea that I'd been nurturing for a couple of years, really. And it was vague, but it was there. It just, the opportunity to tell that story just wasn't really there yet for me. But when Scott and Kevin came over, it was like, bam, the light bulb went off in my head and said, okay, now's the time to tell the story. And I did.
That's, I mean, that whole thing there, when you brought in Hall and Nash and the creation of the NWO, that was like the moment where I became more of a WCW fan than I was a WWF fan for the first time in my life. You know, my buddies and I used to sit there on every Monday night, and we'd flip back and forth. And, you know, you'd try to, you know, we'd watch one, and then when it went to commercial break, we'd flip over to the other, see what's going on, and then go back. We used to have brawls over the remote because there was now a group of us that wanted to watch what you were doing on TBS.
Yeah, and that was, you know, that was the strategy and the tactics that we used to get people to, you know, sample us. You know, there were some pretty cool, you know, strategic moves that we made, and some pretty controversial tactics that we employed in the process to get people like you and your buddies to sample Nitro and what WCW was doing and going head to head with the WWF at that time. And those tactics work. You know, we went from being, you know, a distant number two. We might as well have been a distant number 22 in terms of, you know, market share in 1994 to starting in about 1996. You know, we probably had 70-75% of the market share. And in 98, probably even more than that. So it was a tactic that worked, and it was a lot of fun. It was a great time to be in the wrestling business and to be a fan of the wrestling business.
If there is one point in time that you can point to and say, this is where the boat turned, this is where the demise of WCW began, if there's one thing that you could point to and say, I'd do this differently, or I'd change this, or I'd stop someone from doing something, what is it?
Well, there's more than one. I think the real answer, the honest answer, is that once the AOL Time Warner, those two mergers started to happen, the entire management, I'm talking about executive management, you know, above my pay grade, there was such a seismic shift in culture and goals and strategy that Ted Turner lost control of his own company. It's very well documented. You know, he's done plenty of interviews talking about it. You don't have to take my word for it. But when that corporate culture shifted, WCW's fate was sealed, because Time Warner, AOL, did not want WCW, whether it was profitable or not, they did not want that type of content within their programming profile or portfolio, I should say. That's just a fact of life. So, you know, people who are fans and, you know, consider themselves to be kind of analysts of wrestling history, they'll all look back and they'll say it's because the NWO got too big, or Eric Bischoff, you know, paid too many high salaries, or blah, blah. You know, they all have their reasons that are part of the kind of urban narrative, if you will. But the real answer is corporate culture shifted, and when it did, WCW, as well as a lot of other properties, by the way, that Turner once owned, took a huge hit, CNN being one of them. Look where CNN now is now compared to where it was prior to the AOL Time Warner mergers. I mean, there was a lot of, it wasn't just WCW. There were a lot of properties within Turner Broadcasting that you know, had the same fate. And there's one last kind of reference, if anybody's really interested in looking at it. There's a book written by an author. Her name is Nina Monk. The book is called When Fools Rush In. And that book probably does a better job of explaining what I've just touched on than I could ever do, you know, in days of interviews. So that was one, and that was kind of out of my control. The other one was mostly out of my control, but the moment when I knew we were probably at the fork in the road is when we were mandated to produce a second primetime show for the TBS network. You know, Nitro on TNT was running, you know, we were hitting on all eight cylinders. We were just cruising along. We had great momentum. And it was kind of, it was almost too good, because Ted Turner said, okay, that's great for TNT. Now I want to show, you know, for TBS. And at that point, we just became spread so thin in every way, creatively, talent-wise, just, you know, infrastructure, you know, people, everything you need to sustain momentum. We just got hit with that challenge and that mandate and, quite frankly, couldn't live up to the task.
He's Eric Bischoff with us on the hotline, and you can check out his podcast. It's Bischoff on Wrestling. New episode comes out every Wednesday. You can get it at podcastarena.com. You can also download it free in the iTunes store. Eric, it is always a pleasure to speak with you. I really enjoy our conversations. I hope we can talk again soon.
Anytime, my friend, anytime.
Eric Bischoff on the hotline with us on Eight and Crate Show. We hit the home stretch next. Remember, the NFL wants you to think this is a bad guy. Nate and Crate.